TUC Radio San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness.
Luna, Julia, and the Survival of the Forest. If we had made our 250-mile journey north from San Francisco to Eureka only 120 years ago, we would have traveled along a continuous belt of redwood forest up to 40 miles wide, covering the foggy coastline of Northern California into Oregon. Today, only 3 to 5% of that forest remain. Just north of Garberville, after driving for 5 hours, you can see a 30-mile stretch of forest in Humboldt Redwood State Park. The Park Service says this forest in this location goes back 20 million years. Redwoods are the longest surviving trees on Earth, coming in continuous lineage from the age of the dinosaurs. One of the secrets of their survival is the amazing symbiosis between the trees and the moist Pacific coastline. They absorb water, stabilized hillsides, and protected the streams for the salmon runs. Redwoods are deeply interdependent with each other. What is truly astonishing is that these tallest trees on Earth that live up to 2,000 years have no taproot anchoring them in the ground. Instead, they send out a network of roots close to the surface. They interlock with the neighboring trees and keep the precious soil in place. The hydrology of the trees, their power to heal and repair themselves, to support each other and form family circles, and to become so supportive of the land on which they grow, is only barely understood, and may never be understood, since we are tearing apart the web of life in which they are the crucial link. Just north of this awe-inspiring forest are the holdings of Pacific Lumber Mac-Sam. They include the last remaining privately held old-growth redwood groves on the planet: Headwater Forest, Elk Head Springs, All Species Grove, Shaw Creek, Owl Creek, and Allen Creek Grove. Mac-Sam land is not merely logged but liquidated without regard for the people whose jobs depend on working in the forest, or for the fishing community that depends on the salmon, or the homeowners who lose their houses under landslides, or whole communities whose drinking water gets contaminated. While efforts are being made by environmental groups and local residents to save the old groves and to establish sustainable logging on company land, Pacific Lumber Mac-Sam has sped up the cutting. And even the federal and state-approved plan to buy part of the groves would protect only 7,500 acres while allowing Mac-Sam to write its own rules for logging the remaining 53,000 acres under an HCP, the so-called Habitat Conservation Plan. Environmentalists say that amounts to the fox guarding the chicken house. Earth First activists have diligently recorded the remaining treasures in Mac-Sam hands. This has truly become a battle over each individual tree, and where civil disobedience on the ground did not succeed, trees were occupied by tree sitters. The longest such occupation is by Julia Hill, whose forest name is Butterfly. On December 10, 1998, she completed one full year atop the tree called Luna without ever touching the ground. My friend and TUC intern Jennifer Krill and I visited Julia a few days before her anniversary. After meeting our guide in the small town of Stafford, we crossed Freeway 101 and trespassed onto Pacific Lumber territory. The fog was dense through most of our two-hour hike, and it mercifully obscured the devastated slopes we were climbing. Just below the tree where Julia lives, we emerged from the fog bank. To our right, we could see the area where the landslide originated that buried 7 houses. Enormous chunks of earth and debris are still hanging from that steep slope, with no more trees or vegetation holding them in place, ready to take the 1,600-foot plunge into Stafford at the next very heavy rain. Crossing the last elevation, we had the first full view of the 1,000-year-old redwood tree. Julia's small blue tarp shelter is tied into the canopy just below the top of the 200-foot tree. Luna is not a picture book redwood. The beauty of this tree lies in the open history of her survival. There was lightning that took out her crown a few hundred years ago. She survived a fire at her base, and looking up we could see burls on her trunk where she healed her broken limbs. When Earth Firstess found her 2 years ago, the bright blue mark at her base had designated her to fall and become someone's hot tub, deck, or siding. A continuous occupation began to protect Luna, and Julia took over in December of 1997. Today, Luna stands alone on that hillside with one of her daughter trees at her side. I had never hiked into Timber Company land that had recently been logged and was not prepared for what I saw here. The hill around Luna is a graveyard, and some of the bodies of dead trees are still lying where they fell. This cut had been made during the first week of Julia's occupation of Luna. She witnessed these trees being cut, and from her perch up high, a recording was made of the logging.
Like the first day we were up here, and the attack happened on the tree, and they just instantaneously started cutting. I cried a lot that day. I cried a lot every day. Just sadness as each tree hit the ground, because it makes this crazy sound like you're in a thunderstorm. It just goes, boom, and it crashes through the trees, and it just makes this amazing, like, overwhelming noise. And it's like a sound that wraps itself around you. And then it slams into the ground. It's not just the noise anymore, you feel it. So it's like not only surrounding you, but it's inside of you as it hits the ground. And then everything gets quiet for just that second. It just...
That was Julia Hill in the video Luna by the Headwaters Action Video Collective in Redway, California. And when the trees were down, a twin-prop Columbia helicopter came to take them out. Here is Jennifer Krill talking with Julia.
Describe for us some more what helicopter logging is like. What was that experience like for you?
Like being in the middle of a war zone. If anyone ever watches a movie or watches television where there's an actual war going on, it's just like being in a war. The noise of the helicopter is unbelievable. It sounds like you're in the middle of rapid-fire machine guns for hours and hours. It was close to about 2.5 weeks after the helicopter left when my ears finally quit ringing, because it was literally that loud. Just, I don't know how to make the sound other than to say, think about a firing range with, you know, rapid-fire guns just bam, 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 over and over and over. And the ground shakes and the tree shakes and everything shakes. Much of the canopy of the trees were destroyed, even the trees that were left standing, because the helicopter has about 300-mile-an-hour updrafts that take the trees and spin them up like a rubber band. And then when it flies off, they release just like a rubber band, and limbs go flying everywhere, and the tree is shredded. So I know that any kind of species that were living in the top canopy of the trees around here had to have been affected, because so much of the canopy was destroyed. And it releases a massive amount of noxious toxins. I mean, it just, whenever it would get close, the smell from whatever it was emitting just made me sick to my stomach. And it literally just ripped everything apart. If the updrafts weren't ripping it apart, it was pulling the logs off of the hillside, and the logs hitting into other trees knocked everything down. To me, once you get to that point where you have to use technology like that, it's a sign that something's wrong. You're doing something wrong. And the mudslide that's right next to me that destroyed 7 families' homes in the town of Stafford because they came in here and clear-cut on this hillside is a very real, you know, significant symbol of that statement, that there comes a point in time when you have gone way past the balance.
Does the tree feel pain?
Oh, yes. I realized that when they were cutting all the trees down from around me. And I was really difficult. Just because, you know, anyone who cares about the earth, when you see it being destroyed, you feel like you're losing a part of yourself. And because they were so close all around me, it was very, very intense. And I was crying one day because I felt so ashamed to be a part of a species that has such disrespect for life. And I grabbed onto Luna. And when I first climbed up Luna and was climbing around, I would get sap on me in places. But when that day when I laid down on Luna and hugged her and was crying, when I sat back up, I was completely covered in sap from head to toe. I mean, all over my body was sap. And I started climbing around and looking, and sap was flowing everywhere. And it just hit me that that Luna was crying too, that was Luna's reaction to her brothers and sister and her family being destroyed from all around her. And redwoods are so intricately connected that it is a part of themselves that are actually being destroyed when their environment is being destroyed too. And they cut the trees that were growing out of Luna's trunk right off of her trunk. And that day I was talking to her about that too, part of why I was crying, because I just felt like, I felt as if I would have felt if somebody had came and maybe killed a member of my family. And Luna said that she was tired, that was, you know, the tree's way of passing along their information as to their environment. And Luna was trying to pass down her 1,000 years of information to her environment, and the loggers came in and destroyed that. And she felt very tired, but then later on, she also helped me realize that that's part of the reason why we came to this tree. Because we who care and understand that all life communicates with us, whether it has a mouth or not, could now pass along the message that she was not going to be able to pass along. And I thought that was really wonderful.
You've lived here. You know something that nobody else in the universe knows. So what's it like to be a tree?
Wow. To me, they're the embodiment of balance, both male and female energy, the female energy of the earth and the male energy of the sky. And to me, I think the problem with our society is that we've become imbalanced. We cut our roots away from our connection to nature, started placing our value on things instead of life, and as a result started destroying life for things. And so we just destroyed the balance. But trees are the perfect embodiments of balance because they're tapped into both energies, but also because they do things like take toxins and turn it into something clean or turn it into their own body. And in the immediate way of looking at the shapes of the needles on the tree, on the top canopy of the tree, the needles are shaped kind of like fingers. They have little knobs on the tips. And I realized that the reason for that is because that's how it collects the moisture from the fog and the rain. And it literally grabs the moisture from the fog. And then as you get lower down on the trees, the needles become flatter as a way to let it fall faster and faster as it gets towards the floor. But it has this whole way of dispersing the water, even down to the design on the trunk. Because this is a rainforest and there's too much water. If this tree was, you know, all the kind of trees that have smooth bark and flat leaves, the ground would become oversaturated and we'd see miles upon miles of mudslides. And so just this understanding of the connection just to the tree, and then paying attention to everything around me, it started fitting all those pieces of the puzzle together that helped me understand how amazingly and intricately connected everything in life is. Being in a redwood tree, I'm sure, is a lot different than if I had spent a year in another tree, too, just because this tree is over 1,000 years old. And there's just an inherent sense of spirituality and knowledge in any living being that is that old. You know, our planet is a living being that's much older than that. But it's harder to become one with the planet as the whole, and it's easier to become one with, say, a tree if you live in it for a year. It takes something magnificent to have a being that's still living 1,000 years after its birth. And that's something that humans really can't understand, even with all of our science out there. We can stick it into categories and into boxes. But I think becoming one with the trees helped me understand that the beauty and the power and the connectedness of our planet and thus ourselves is something that defies description. And that's where its amazing magic to me lies.
We heard that the head of Pacific Lumber says that you're preventing endangered species from nesting in this tree. Is that true, Julia?
That was so funny. He did that on CNN. We were in a debate on CNN. And I honestly believe that because all he had seen of me pretty much was the print media and television media has an editing room where everything I say that's of any value gets chopped up you know, by the time it makes it out in mainstream corporate media. So he pretty much, I think, was basing his decision on what kind of a person I was by that print media that he had seen. So I think he underestimated me, because when we went into, I was really nervous, because that was the first big thing that I had done. And so CNN was a big deal, especially because it was CNN with John Campbell live in a debate. I was a little nervous. You know, this woman, he used to sit in the corner and was never in the spotlight, never an activist like I am now. So this was a really big first step for me. And but it was actually quite an easy interview, because he said things like that this tree, you know, he said, I wish Ms. Hill would come down so that some animals could live in that tree. And I took all I could do not to just burst out in hysterical laughter, considering the fact that this tree had a bright big paint slash at the bottom of it that marked it to be cut down. And so I had to tell him that. I said, I think it's really interesting that you had this tree marked to turn into somebody's deck or siding, and yet you're saying you're worried about the animals. And I said, on top of that, you know, you hovered the helicopters in this area that shredded the top canopy of the trees. You don't care about the animals, or you wouldn't have marked this tree for destruction, and you wouldn't have been helicopter logging.
So what do you hope to achieve by being up here in this tree in Luna?
I think any time you enter nature in its intact form, in its original form, you connect with the knowledge and the power and the spirituality of life as it was meant to be and as how we were meant to be a part of it. And it's not necessarily the kind of knowledge and power and beauty and spirituality that can be taught. It's that inherent sense of connection that happens when creation was born, as creation evolves, that thread that connects all life. And when you enter an intact ecosystem like a 2,000-year-old forest, then it really hits you. And I was just blown away. I was overwhelmed. I immediately began crying and sunk my face and my hands into the soil and just breathed and just was just like, wow, my God, this is amazing. And then a few weeks later, I found out it was being destroyed by Pacific Lumber Mac Sam, and all I knew was that was wrong and I had to do something. That's all I knew. And I came out here with no knowledge of, I didn't even know, actually in the beginning, I didn't even know it was Pacific Lumber Mac Sam that was destroying it. I just knew it was being destroyed. And so I came out here with nothing other than an intense desire to do something. I knew that I had to do something, because I felt that if I didn't, I was going to be a part of the destruction just as much as Pacific Lumber Mac Sam. Knowing what I knew, having the time and the energy to commit that I had, if I had turned my back on it and gone somewhere else, I would have been a part of the destruction too. So over time, my purpose in Luna has kind of been multi-purpose. One is to do everything in my power to save Luna and hopefully some trees around her. And we're talking about, you know, we're talking about the last 3 to 5% of original old growth forest. Every single tree is priceless. Every single one of them. And every single forest is priceless. But more than that, I wanted to reach out to people and show them the bigger picture by the example of the smaller picture, which is this grove that I'm in and the Headwaters Forest Pacific Lumber Mac Sam Corporation issue. Our life is not supposed to be one of dominion. When we came into that concept of managing and controlling, we started managing and controlling ourselves out of what was given us for free all along. We were given clean air, clean water, and clean land for free, from the earth, for free. And now we spend money on getting those things clean because we misplaced our value system. We placed a value on things instead of life. And as a result, we started destroying life for things. So I wanted to reach out to people and say, remember the oneness. Remember the balance. Realize that a paycheck's not going to mean anything when everything of real value is destroyed. You're going to end up spending all your hard-earned money buying back what nature gave us for free all along. We don't have to destroy the planet. We need to protect it. And in protecting it, we will truly protect the very quality of our lives. And so in the forest issues, it is the generations that came before us disrespected life and each other, because look at the legacy that you and I have to deal with today. We have to deal with the consequences of other people's greed. 95 to 97% of all original old growth forests are gone. They're gone. Why are they gone? Because people believe the lies that we had to destroy the planet to make a paycheck. Well, look at the rate we're going. Sure, we can keep on cutting, but if we're down to 3%, that means something. Pretty soon we're going to have no old growth and no jobs. And so if we're talking, to me, it's about love and respect. Well, one of the first things we have to do is save the remaining old growth forest. They're priceless. If people can look past next week's paycheck and look into the future, they will realize that saving the remaining fragmented old growth forest is priceless. No amount of money in the world can equal what these forests are worth to the planet and thus to ourselves. The second thing is that we have to start taking into consideration the bigger picture, such as steep, unstable slope issues. You cannot cut on steep, unstable slopes. If it takes technology like a helicopter to get the logs out, you better not be in there, because these areas are prone to instability. We're also talking about a rainforest. There's meant to be a lot of water here. But in all the forest issues, in steep slopes, trees, their roots act as a way to lock in the soil, and the trees themselves act like a sponge that soak up water. These are extremely important in holding a hillside up, especially when it's so steep that it's prone to slide anyway. And the third thing to me that's important in all forest issues is clear cutting. Clear cutting is not sustainable on any level. It's not sustainable economically, and it's not sustainable for the planet and for the quality of our lives. And we don't have to clear cut. And as a result of the disrespect of clear cut comes a compounded disrespect of herbicide, pesticide use, chemical fertilizers, and dumping diesel or napalm on the clear cut to light it on fire. And so that is disrespect from the beginning to the end of that process, because not only does it disrespect the forest by turning it into a clear cut and then maybe a tree farm, but it also disrespects people's very lives by poisoning the earth on level after level. And so those are the important issues of forest to me. That sustainability is important because sustainability is a process of thinking that has to do with respect. And that, to me, is what I'm about.
Headwaters and Pacific Lumber have a habitat conservation plan. What do you think the implications of that are for Headwaters and for other places in the U.S., wildernesses that are subject now to HCPs?
You know, the Endangered Species Act was brought into existence because species were going extinct at an alarming rate. And the reason they were is because we as humans have refused to think about the consequences of our actions. When we go and do something, when we say something, when we think something, we forget about the consequences of those things. And as a result, big businesses came in and started ripping the environment apart for subdivisions, for development, or for extraction, and not paying attention to the consequences of their actions until, oh my God, another species is extinct? Why is that happening? You know? So then they came up with the Endangered Species Act to try and, what they say, mitigate, to try and lessen the destruction to these species. And as well as if a species was in a dangerous, critical condition, whether it be plant or animal, this was a law to help protect that. Well, a habitat conservation plan was brought into existence as a compromise to the Endangered Species Act. It was brought into existence not to protect species, but to protect the government from lawsuits being filed against them for enforcing the Endangered Species Act. HCP, to me, is an acronym for a horrible concept, period.
Would you encourage others to do what you have done?
I tell people everyone has their own personal tree to sit in. That's what I, quote-unquote, personal tree. The media has focused on me as, look at this woman, she's proven that one person can make a difference. I say, no, I've proven that we do make a difference. Every single one of us make a difference. Every time we take a step, every time we throw something away, every time we open a refrigerator, turn on the stove, get in our car, many things that I haven't done in a year, but every time we do those things, we make a difference. Therefore, the difference we can make is up to each and every one of us, but we must do something, because our inactions are as much a part of our reality as our actions. And in today's world, where corporations driven by a value system purely of profit are running rampant over the earth and the very quality of our lives. And so we have to do something. There's so much devastation, There's wrongful imprisonment. Leonard Peltier sitting in prison for 22 years for a crime he never committed. The nuclear waste issues, the deforestation issues, all of these issues are so overwhelming that people just tune them out. They think, I can't make a difference. This is too much for me. But when you add a little bit of hope and you add a little bit of inspiration, it makes people realize that, yes, we do make a difference, and therefore, yes, I can make a difference. And those two things added together is what it takes to motivate people to take action. And when they take action, they bring about change. And if they take action in a positive way, then the only kind of change that can happen is positive.
That was Julia Hill. Her forest name is Butterfly. She has been living in a 1,000-year-old growth redwood tree called Luna in Northern California for 1 year and counting. Jennifer Krill spoke with Julia while I was still working hard to climb up the 100-foot rope to the lower platform. The evening coolness set in. Our guide Michael's voice on the walkie-talkie reminded us that we had to leave to get out of the forest before dark. Julia connected a rappel ring to my harness that allowed me to slide down the rope. In that descent, the landscape far and below came back into view, the ocean in the distance, clear cuts on the ridge across, and deep below the Eel River now running yellow with mud. 130 years ago, the Wiot Indians had 3 villages along the Eel. The water was so clear that they could spear salmon with harpoons. They made canoes out of redwoods but never cut a living tree. They used only trees that had fallen. Ironically, the history of Pacific lumber began right here in 1863 when Henry Witherby and A.W. McPherson bought the first 6,000 acres on both sides of the Eel River. At $1.25 per acre, the land was cheap. It had been confiscated from the Indians by the United States Land Office and deeded to the state of California for resale. We returned to the car in Stafford, and as we said goodbye to Michael, he pointed back to the ridge above. You can see the tree from here, he said, and we just put in a small beacon that you can see when it gets really dark. To help protect the forest and get in touch with the video makers or Julia, call the Mendocino Environmental Center in Ukiah at 707-468-1660. That's 707-468-1660. TUC Radio is supported by listeners like you. For the full one-hour tape, Luna, Julia, and the Survival of the Forest, send $10 to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. For a credit card order, call toll-free at 877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. The music is by Gia Sajdev. My name is Mariah Gillarden with Jennifer Krill. We thank you for listening.